All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
You may recognize him from the famous line in his biopic, "I'm the captain now." But there was more to this merchant mariner story than what Hollywood depicted. Failed sabotage attempts, savage beatings, and a lot of chocolate Pop-Tarts. This week's episode is Captain Phillips and the Maersk Alabama Hijacking.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Well, we're back on solid ground. We've returned.
Back on solid ground. What a time, man. Thank you to everybody who came out to Crime Wave at Sea. It was so much fun.
Oh, man.
From the second we stepped on the ship to the second we stepped off, I had a good time.
There's no, I mean, it says something that I was like, I don't think I want to do a cruise ship ever. And then now I'm on algorithms and getting like videos of people and their cruises now. And I'm like, no, I only want to go on Crime Wave. You don't understand internet. But thank you to everybody who came and who hung out with us and talked to us and just met us and shared your stories. And it was so much fun. That was exactly what we signed up for, is that we wanted to go on vacation with you. And that is what we got to do. And to the whole staff at In Real Life Events, IRL, they were phenomenal. All the rest of the creators, especially Henry and Ed, who let us jump on side stories with them. Thank you all for all the wonderful feedback that it was crossover.
It was such a fun time. The whole thing was fun. Everyone we met was great. Everyone just understood the assignment with all the theme nights, the game show that was a fever dream, but that was so much fun.
Yeah.
All of it was a ton of fun. And you are going to get to hear the show that we did there. And I'm sorry if you have FOMO. I get it. I would too if I was listening to this, because it was a great time for a 9 a.m. show.
I was going
to
say.
Thank you, everyone, for being just like came bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to do the thing. And then we all got to go hang out at the pool at Coco Cay and look at a lot of iguanas.
Huge fucking iguanas.
So many.
I didn't expect them. Some guys, like, when I gasped at one of them, he goes, they're not going to attack you. I said, first of all, you don't know that. And second of all, I can be in awe at just how fucking big it is. Huge-ass ones. But yeah, if you have FOMO, you should be sad that you missed the iguanas. But the good news is you can listen to this anytime you want. You don't have to wake up at 9 a.m. after partying all night the night before. But you're going to learn hopefully a lot about, if you've seen the Tom Hanks movie, the kind of the backstory behind it. And shout out to Captain Phillips' family member, who I got to meet recently at a pool party and shared some very funny anecdotes about the family. So
Who would have known that a close relative of Captain Phillips would be on the ship? But
not
they
just
were
on the ship.
So that's amazing.
At Crime Wave.
At like Crime Wave. Not just on the ship. At Crime Wave itself. Yeah.
Oh, so shout out. So if you're listening to this, please feel free to write your story into Freaky Friday, because we would love to share it. Or if any other Captain Phillips family members happen to hear this.
Or anyone. Yeah.
Or Captain Phillips. If you want to come on the show, we would love to interview you, buddy. Anytime
you want. Oh, 100%. You got a standing invitation.
But listen to the episode first. And if you're okay with my impression of you, then I'm then asked to come on the show.
Yeah. You know, I think what we've learned is if you're from Boston, that's if you're Stephen King, JFK, or Captain Phillips, this is what you're going to sound like. I guess Stephen King is more Maine, but it's all, you know, it's all up there.
From this real life King of the Hill character, it sort of all sounds the same to me. So we hope you all enjoy it. And we can't wait to see you aboard the next one, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll be, I believe the next Crime Wave is February 2027. So if this sounds like fun and all the pictures that we'll share sounds like fun and looks like fun, it's because it totally was. And we hope that you can all join us at the next one.
Absolutely. Well, enjoy Captain Phillips.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Welcome, buddy.
Welcome to the first session of the day.
Yes.
We're going to talk about management.
How is everybody feeling?
Are you having a good time on the cruise so far? We're on day four now, isn't it?
Incredible. My first cruise. Any other first-time cruisers hauler?
First-time cruisers?
Any other veteran cruisers hauler? Okay, we got a good mix. So you have people to ask advice to.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I've been having a blast.
So much fun.
Everybody's been so delightful, from the In Real Life crew to all of you to the Royal Caribbean staff. Just, it's been a bomb-ass time.
It's been so much fun. And as a person who loudly said I would never go on a cruise and that they're horrific and you shouldn't go.
We did say that on a bunch of times, once.
Specifically about Royal Caribbean. So thank you for not putting me on the no ship list, because they did let me on. I was like, I get bored, right? But having been here, yesterday I did the bowels of the ship tour. They don't call it that. They call it behind the waves. But on the bowels of the ship tour, I've come around. I really think, and I've been on the balcony a lot, having been here firsthand, I need to amend our Amy Bradley episode. I agree on the trafficking situation, or like she got off the ship. Having inspected the underneath myself.
Oh, she's done some detective work. Now she's ready to form a hypothesis.
This bitch got to see stuff for herself. So, but I will say, if you went to our recording with Side Stories, first of all, shout out to Henry and Ed. Give them a round of applause.
Oh my gosh.
Incredible. What a time. We love those guys.
So funny.
But I had jokingly said I was not going to pay the $130, and I did. They got my money, and it was worth it. It was worth it. I'll say it.
They did a two-hour tour.
It was 2 hours.
To the point where her husband was worried because he hadn't heard from her in a while.
He's like, are you okay? And I was like, they took me down in the depths. And you can get lost in the depths is all I'm saying. But don't get lost in the depths. You made it all the way here. We have some stuff to give away before we get rolling with our show. So we want to know two things.
Yeah.
First of all,
well, I guess we're trying to determine who traveled the farthest. So if you think you traveled the farthest, shout out where you traveled from.
Australia?
Anyone beat Australia?
Everyone goes, no. That's right. I came from down under. Okay, Australia, come on up. Okay, here's your prize. It's an autographed tumbler that has our names on it. So have so much fun with that. Thank you. And then we have some tapes. Who else traveled from far? We have
Australia. Did anybody come from another country?
UK. And then we have episode 13.
If you know, you know.
It's on cassette tape, and we signed them.
Which Heather described last night to a person I'd met for the first time as an unfortunate fecal accident. Which I said sounds grosser than what actually happened to me somehow.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we also want to know if you went to Season of the Witch and are here. Yes, if you went to Season of the Witch and are here, we have some tapes for you too.
Yeah.
So you're our Season of the Witch attendees?
Oh, okay, thank you. We hope you like that show. That was a super fun show.
So, yeah. We got more. Come on down. It's like the Price is Right rules. Come on down. What's up, friend? Hey, it's good to see you. All right, any other Season of The Witchers? All right, you know, we said it in person, but thank you for coming virtually. We do appreciate that. So, all right, these are for our last farthest away attendees.
Yeah, so we have Australia, UK.
Australia got theirs. Canada. Take us with you.
Please, yeah.
Take us back. Take us back.
We're giving you that. You have to give us a visa
What's
in return.
What's up, UK? Thank you. Absolutely.
Amazing.
Hell yeah.
All right. Everyone else is from America?
Well, here you go.
Yeah. Well, what's the furthest place from Fort Lauderdale?
Probably like Pacific Northwest. Seattle?
Pacific Northwest, probably. Yeah.
Oh God, Jesus Christ.
Heather. Do we have another one to give her? I feel like...
I'm going to give you something out of my personal check bag for that. So, what's your name? Sam, thank you.
Oh,
Come see me. I'm so sorry.
Normally, you carry tiny little Bigfoots with you, but I don't think They let us on the ship with them.
No, they checked all my pockets.
Yeah, we
took them out.
Well, thank you to everybody, wherever you
thank
came
you.
From. We know this is a huge ask to ask everyone to travel here. And as cliche as it sounds, in this economy, but for real. In this economy.
Thank you.
We couldn't appreciate it more, all of our diehard fans like you all. This has been so much fun, and we literally couldn't be here without all of you. So thank you so, so very much. We have we wanted to do, of course, an ocean-themed type of show. We'd already done the Kraken and Amy Bradley and everything. And then we were like, what about the real-life Captain Phillips story? Who remembers that?
2009.
But what year did the movie come out?
Oh, the 2013.
Yes, yep. 2013, starring Tom Hanks.
I was asking a person about it, and they were like, I said, Captain Phillips, and they're like, and I said, Marisk, Alabama, and they went, and I said, look at me, I'm the captain now. And they went, oh my God, yes. And I was like, great, that was never even really said in the whole situation.
Spoiler alert, that was not said.
But it's I'm the captain now.
Very recognizable, isn't it? I should have worn my admiral's hat today.
That's another thing, we're going to get thrown off, because I know where the bridge is now, and she's got an admiral's cap. So I have a bucket hat, so you're the captain, and I'm Gilligan, or you're skipper, and I'm Gilligan, which, accurate?
Oh, well, matey, is that what
Avast.
I call you?
Ahoy.
Well, as you all know, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it.
Hell yeah.
Richard Phillips was born on May 16th, 1955, in Winchester, Massachusetts, into a close-knit Irish-American family. From a young age, he was drawn to the sea and the idea of exploration beyond New England. He studied international law at Amherst before transferring to the Massachusetts Maritime Academy, driving taxis at night to pay tuition.
100% I would quit international law to drive a taxi or drive a boat. So,
with no intention of ever a step beyond that,
never.
Just to get out of international law?
Exactly.
Phillips began his maritime career soon after graduating in 1979, steadily working his way through the ranks of the Merchant Marine until he earned a captain's post with Maersk Line, one of the world's leading shipping companies. Around this time, he met Andrea Coggio, a nursing student he first encountered in a bar near Fenway Park in Boston. They married in 1987 and later settled in Underhill, Vermont, raising two children, a son and a daughter.
His opening line would be, his name is Richard Phillips, so he would go, I'm rich, as in filthy.
That's a pretty sick opening line, though, if you're not. And it's better than I'm dick,
which as in filthy.
No, that one's better. I'm dick as in filthy is better.
They're like, I don't want your filthy dick in me.
I want your rich dick.
For sure.
It's like, well, what if we put your hands together, Andrea? And
why
that's
not both?
How they got a son and a daughter.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Hey there, it's Christy. If you're loving Sinisterhood, you need to check out Crimes Of, the newest show from Crime House Studios, hosted by Sabrina Deanna Roga and Corinne Vien of Two Girls, One Ghost. Crimes Of is a weekly true crime anthology series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, mysterious disappearances, and more.
For their first season, Sabrina and Corinne are diving into Crimes of Infamy, the real-life events behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains, from cult classics to massive franchises.
Norman Bates, Buffalo Bill, Ghostface, Jason Voorhees. The names alone are enough to send a shiver down your spine. And now, you'll be immersed into the chilling crimes that inspired them.
Crimes Of is a Crime House original powered by Pave Studios. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen.
Life at sea often meant months away from home, but Phillips maintained a careful balance between his demanding work and his family life, alternating three-month rotations aboard ship with equal time at home. Phillips was exceedingly proud of his role as a merchant mariner, calling the career
the invisible service.
This is like JFK.
Honestly, I was just like, I'll do a regular voice and then watch interviews with him. And I was like, uh-oh.
He's got a thick Boston accent, if you remember the JFK series. He said a lot of merchant mariners had a chip on their shoulders because
we never make the headlines.
That was JFK. Who certainly did make the headlines, didn't he? Yeah,
one kind of headline. But
in our fair city, for sure.
That, I like that we got
we can't help that we're from the city that assassinated a president, okay?
We can't help we're from the city where the government used us to assassinate a president.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. Where they still spray paint an X on the street where it happened. And then every day the street cleaners try to clean it off. And every morning there's a faithful conspiracy theorist out there with a can of spray paint getting it back on.
And if you heard our conspiracies of JFK episode, then we think we know who it is. It's the guy that I bought all that shit from at the table. Yeah.
On March 28, 2009, Captain Phillips shipped out as he had done many times before. Rather than goodbye, he always told his wife, Andrea, he'd see her later. This time offering...
See you in June.
That sounds ominous.
See you in June.
It
was ominous in a way. He just had no idea.
Right? I didn't realize, 3 months on, 3 months off was actually one of the shortest times to be shipped out. He said some of his colleagues would be out 7 months or 2 years at a time. And even the 3 months, his son would jokingly say, oh, I don't have a dad. He's never home. Which, if you have a son that says that as a joke... Perhaps
that it's not funny.
It's horrifying.
That's like when the kids are like, you got to go record. I'm like, stop it. I'll give up this show right now if you make me feel guilty. I'm just kidding. I won't. Philip set out for Salalah, Oman on the east coast of the Arabian Peninsula with several layovers. In all, the journey took around 45 hours.
So he had to fly from Burlington to D.C., D.C. to Zurich, Zurich to Oman, and then he had a layover in Oman. And I was like, I wouldn't make that layover. I was like, fuck it. No, I'm done.
You've come so far at that point, though. You just got one more flight.
One more flight. Well, and then Salalah's got a lovely airport.
There you go. When Phillips arrived on the ship, he met his new crew. Though he had worked with some before, each journey meant the arriving captain had to orient himself with the crew already aboard the ship. Phillips described the Maersk Alabama as a skyscraper floating on its side. Alabama could hold 192 shipping containers, often full of goods for retailers like Walmart, Target, or Amazon.
And this particular trip, they were taking what he called handshake food, which is like USAID, RIP, food to, in this case, Rwanda. And he said that was going to be the only food that those recipients would get for 6 months. So he's like, I felt a real burden to get this where it was going as quickly as possible because literally people were hungry for this.
Yeah.
It's a big ass ship, though.
Oh, yes.
Not big enough.
So the Maersk was 508 feet long, 83 feet wide, top speed 18 knots, powered by a single diesel engine, two 40-foot cranes in the front and back, and 20-foot containers. So to compare that with the ship that we're currently on, we're about double the length, about double the width, and a little more for speed. So it gives you an idea of what they were working with, but also some security that we're not going to get attacked by pirates because we're a little too high up off the sea.
On my tour yesterday, I got to see the engine control room, and then I asked if you take up the stabilizers, everything, and what's the fastest it could go? And Matt, who was lovely, our tour guide, was like, oh, the ship would explode, but it could go like 22 knots. So there's six...
ship would explode.
And I was like, cool.
What?
he was saying that there's six engines on this ship and they only really run two at a time and they don't even run them at all. Like, he's like, we could get wherever we needed to go quickly, but we're going like 7 knots. I was like, so we don't all barf by like speeding through.
Yeah. Yes.
But he also said, one of my fellow tour participants asked, like, what's the pirate situation on here? And he just kept going, pirates never attack cruise ships. Never, never, they never. And then we had dinner with Henry and Ed, and they were like, speed two? Pirates have and will attack cruise ships.
The ship had 5 decks for the crew quarters. A deck housed the mess hall and hospital. B deck was a lounge and quarters for the sailors, known on boards as ABs. An abbreviation for...
Able-bodied seamen.
Raise your hand if we think maybe seamen should just be for one or the other. It's either a sailor or it's sperm. But it has always made me a bit uncomfortable that they're interchangeable.
Yeah,
I understand that it's not the same spelling, but still, you don't hear it.
We don't hear it, but I guess in the book, I listened to the audio, and it's not him narrating, but it kept going, able-bodied semen. There were 13 semen. Semen were everywhere on the deck. And I was like, I'm going to do... And I thought, maybe I'll just cut them all together and play them for you guys, but we only had an hour show, and we couldn't do a two-hour show. So.
Oh, man. Able-bodied semen on the deck is when you got to get those hoses out. And... Get to swabbing that old deck.
Get that spray.
C deck had more crew quarters. D deck was for the engineers and mates. And E deck was where the captain and chief engineer lived while aboard. Security aboard was loose when Phillips arrived. The company manual called for barbed wire and lookouts, but the Alabama had neither. On day one aboard his new ship, Phillips conducted safety drills that emphasized speed, hoses, and secure doors. The Office of Naval Intelligence had just reported 39 pirate attacks in East African waters in 1 week. Phillips told the crew that if their safety measures failed, their last option was to fight.
And he said, there's always like a super old dude on your crew that's like, I'll take him myself. He's like, I had to be like, you need to lock yourself away.
Did he have a peg leg and a pirate or a parrot on his shoulder?
He's like, I know them, boy. They're of my kind. Let me take them. But these are all possible safety measures a ship could have. And that's what the Maersk Alabama had, which is to say none, really.
Yes. So you're traveling into waters where 39 pirate attacks were just reported in 1 week. And you have some hoses that were jets was generous.
It's very generous.
It was like a backyard hose when you put your thumb over the end of it.
100%. They should be like dedicated high pressure hoses. These were some of the fire hoses that three were off the back, two were on the front, and they would turn on and they would spray, but maybe not like knock you down spray.
No.
Which is what you want.
Zero guns.
Not to sound Texan, but we'd have stopped the show right now if they had just these fellows just right in the front. I'm just saying.
If we'd had just like one on, we wouldn't even have anything to report on, I don't think.
Or everybody at least has one hook hand, like just that you can, like a pirate costume, but it's sharp.
Yeah, it would have been a fair fight.
Yeah.
On April 1st, 2009, the Maersk Alabama left Salalah carrying food aid bound for Mombasa, Kenya. The planned route took the ship through the Gulf of Aden, a crucial but perilous maritime corridor near the Horn of Africa. This area, off the coast of Somalia, had become infamous for pirate attacks throughout the 2000s.
Yeah, the Gulf of Aden is where trillions of dollars of goods pass through and like 10% of the world's oil. So that's why.
Yes, yeah. By early 2009, piracy off the Somali coast had become a full-blown crisis. Lawlessness following the collapse of Somalia's government, combined with widespread poverty and illegal fishing by foreign vessels, had driven many coastal Somalis into piracy. What began as local resistance to illegal fishing evolved into an organized, lucrative criminal enterprise targeting international shipping. The dangers of the region were well known, and ships traveling through the area often took precautions, such as maintaining greater distances from the Somali coast or hiring private security. In the days leading up to the Maersk Alabama's voyage, the U.S. Navy had issued 7 separate email bulletins warning of increased pirate activity along the route.
It's a lot. The blue ones are what had happened in 2008. This was April of 2009, and then the reds are what happened throughout 2009. So October through May is pirate season in the Indian Ocean, and so this was in April. So he was like, you're having the people that maybe didn't do so well all season, and they're like desperate if you're going there right before the typhoons or the monsoons start. So.
Yes, and they kind of were led to that desperation because people were overfishing their waters, mm-hmm. and the way they were normally making money kind of got decimated. So then they're like, well, we're just going to go take it back from these ships then.
I always feel like if someone is being extremely brutal in their tactics, you have to trace back of like, you didn't wake up a pirate. Like, you weren't born a pirate, right? You were a little kid at some point. And then you see if you grow up in an area, they take little kids and turn them into pirates. You can see how someone becomes a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
Sinister Hood will be right back.
You've probably seen a million ads for hair growth products and thought, sure, like that actually works. I did too, until I found out that Nutrafol isn't like the rest of them. Nutrafol is physician formulated, clinically tested, and dermatologists recommend it.
Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. You can feel great about what you're putting into your body since Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF content certified, the gold standard in third-party certification for supplements.
While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests its final formulations using advanced hair measurement tools like hair counts and pull tests to track real improvements in growth, quality, shedding, and texture. And it's not just backed by studies. The research is published in peer-reviewed journals and vetted by doctors, ensuring scientific rigor and reliable results.
Adding Nutrafol into your daily routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription required. Automated deliveries and free shipping keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20%. You'll have access to free one-on-one naturopathic doctor consults to support you on your hair growth journey, and a Headspace meditation membership is included.
See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code CREEPY.
Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code CREEPY. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code CREEPY.
Phillips was advised to take the ship at least 600 miles off the Somali coast to minimize risk, but he opted for a course roughly 240 miles offshore, much closer than the Navy's recommendation. Despite the warnings, Phillips' ship pressed on, and the crew remained on alert for potential pirate skiffs. As part of Maersk Merchant Fleet, the Alabama was unarmed, leaving its defense reliant on evasive maneuvers and non-lethal deterrence tactics. 3 days before the attack, on April 4th, the crew spotted a mothership towing smaller skiffs 7 miles behind, a sure sign of pirates. Pirate attacks usually occurred just after sunrise or just before sunset, when visibility dropped from 7 miles to less than four. Worried, Phillips radioed the UK Maritime Trade Operations, who brushed off his concerns. He then attempted to reach the U.S. piracy line, but received no answer. Phillips faked a call to the U.S. Navy, and the skiffs disappeared.
Can you imagine you call, and first of all, he called the UK office, who said, "It's not pirates. You should lock all the doors, though, and shoot the waters that you have." And he's like, "So is it not pirates?" And they go, "Lock the doors. Gotta go." And then he called the U.S., and it was like, "This call cannot be answered at this time."
That's brand.
America, fuck yeah. Not coming to save the day. So he just literally got on and did what I did when there was a guy trying to steal my Ring doorbell, which you do a two-man fake out that you're that you've got a gun, where I said, "Babe, go get the gun." And then I went, "I'm on my way."
There is footage of this,
yes.
And it's one of the funniest things. But you know what?
It worked.
It got the Ring camera still got yanked off, but the guy left immediately. It could have been worse.
Dropped it. But Captain Phillips was like, "This is the Maersk Alabama. There's the Navy, or there's pirates coming." And he's like, "This is the Navy. We have guns and helicopters, and we're on our way." And he's like, "Sounds good. We'll wait it out." And then they just watched the skiffs go away because the pirates would monitor their radio channels. Mm-hmm. So good idea, man.
And it's very accurate in the movie, too, that mm-hmm. part, too. But yeah. Everyone looked at Captain Phillips like he was insane, and then it worked, much like I was like, "Heather, you don't even sound like Paris." Eggs on my face because the intruder left. As the sun was just beginning to rise on April 7th, the Maersk Alabama was about 300 miles off the coast of Somalia when the crew spotted a white skiff racing toward them at high speed. Captain Phillips ordered full speed, 16.8 knots, and immediately called the UK Maritime Trade Operations Center and sounded the intruder alarm. Moving at 21 knots, the skiff continued closing the distance. Shots rang out against the ship's hull. Phillips grabbed a flare gun and fired back.
"I saw one man sitting cross-legged in the skiff,"
JFK wrote. describing how one of the attackers was aiming an AK-47 at the ship's bridge.
So we're going to play Would You Rather. If you're in a fight, would you rather have an AK-47 or a flare gun? I think we know the answer.
I think we know the answer every time, but these white, little white skiffs that would come off the mothership can go so much faster than the large ship. And, you know, they would zigzag and try and create wake to make it really hard for the skiffs. But those pirates, I mean, you got to give them A+ for determination because they're just va-voom, va-voom. But they can come up so fast and you just see those in the distance and you're like,
gut wrenching.
We're fucked. We can't get away faster than they can get to us, and no one gave us a gun.
Not at all. And at this point, it was they knew what would happen. Like there were like 200 current hostages with other Somali pirates at the time of this attack. So it's like you know what their plan is, you know what they want to do, and that you cannot get away from them. Pretty much no matter what you do, just like you said, given the speed,
you just got to go into lockdown mode.
All the interviews with the pirates, and you can't blame them. We're like, we don't give a fuck. We'll kill anybody. We'll die. We don't fucking care. Our life is so fucking bad. We will do anything. And again, you're just like, this is a person at the end. They're very desperate and will do anything. And they're coming right for me.
And they're working for crime bosses back in Somalia who are expecting their cut. So they're like, if we don't come back with something, that's it for us. So it's kind of like, there's a good chance we're dying regardless. Mm-hmm. So we might as well give it all, try and get some money out of this.
I did appreciate Captain Phillips was like, I basically made eye contact with this like young face. I mean, he throughout his whole book's like, these were kids. And he's just like, that was terrifying because I've got a kid and I wouldn't give him an AK-47 and have him just be like scratching his head with it. And they're just very loose with it. So it's heartbreaking for sure.
When evasive zigzags and bursts of speed failed, Phillips watched as the pirates used a long, custom-made ladder to hook onto the ship's rail. The Alabama's deck stood only about 20 feet above water, low enough for boarders to climb quickly. Within minutes, the armed men were on deck. Phillips pressed the ship's security alert button and announced on the radio,
"We're being boarded."
Where was LBJ during all of this?
He was like, I'll get him one way or another.
Yeah. The CIA is like, attempt failed. Put him on a ship. One of the pirates boarding was Abduwali Muse, born around 1990 in Galkayo, a divided city in central Somalia, torn by clan conflict and poverty. By age 12, Muse was on his own, surviving in a brutal environment where violence and hunger were part of daily life. Piracy emerged in this chaos as both protest and survival, and Muse rose within the world as a ringleader. When his skiff approached the Alabama, he was barely 20.
Yeah, growing up in a divided city where non-governmental factions just put a line in the middle, and if you cross the line, it's like gang territory, essentially, and you do have to align yourself with someone if you want to eat. So being 12 and having your parents not available, not around, and then someone says, I'll feed you. Can you swim and use a gun was like the question. And they might say no to one, and they'll go, all right, we'll teach you. And if you said no to both, they would teach you.
Yeah. The barrier for entry was low. You just had to be willing to do it. And there were gangs competing against each other, too, even within pirates. So, I mean, like in the movie, they kind of schoolyard pick their crew at the beginning, and then it's like whoever gets to this ship first gets first dibs at it.
Because they wanted the hungriest, fastest, most eager.
The four pirates, all young, thin, and armed with AK-47s, moved fast. Phillips was in the bridge and refused to leave. Rather than retreat to the safe room like the rest of the crew, he chose to stay. He later called this his first mistake.
And it was Phillips, and then one of the other sailors happened to also be in the bridge, and then as the...
You mean Shane?
No, Shane.
Shane, Shane is...
Chief engineer.
The most low-key, like, dude bro. Okay. He's just like, cool. Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'll find the rest of the crew and tell them pirates are boarding. I'll check you later, Captain. And you're like, you're not panicking enough for me.
We're like, fucking move, Shane. And in real life, Captain Phillips had worked with Shane once before and said, oh, I knew him. He was a real Boy Scout type, really like checked all the boxes. And I was like, if I were Shane and I watched 2013's Captain Phillips, I'd be kind of pissed. I'd be like, I'm not some fucking idiot who's just like, I don't know, brother, where do you want to go?
He was very laid back.
Yeah. So he went down, Shane at least followed instructions and went down with the rest of the crew down into the bowels of the ship where they were supposed to hide.
Yes, they had a whole plan of where they were supposed to hide.
Like this, muster stations.
Mustard! Muse, identified as the group's leader, pointed his rifle at the bridge window and shouted,
where is the crew?
Phillips replied,
I don't know where they are. I'm here with you.
Phillips kept a radio in his hand, turned to the crew's frequency so they could track the pirates' movements from their hiding spots in the predetermined safe rooms. Upon Phillips' orders, the engineers then cut the ship's power from below deck, ensuring it couldn't be sailed to Somalia.
Yeah, Phillips did a lot of surreptitious things. He turned the radar buttons all the way so the radar wouldn't really work, and so the Somalis thought that their mothership had left them. He turned the external radio to a weird frequency so the radio wouldn't work, and then he would just hold the little button on the radio and be like, I really would hate if the electricity randomly went out and then the electricity would just go out. And the pirates were like, your ship fucking sucks.
He's like, I know. Y'all should get off of it.
Yeah, he kept just being like, I know, man. He's like, you broke the ship, dude. I don't know. And like, Captain Phillips really did like have a good psychological game going with the pirates. He goes, I reversed Stockholm syndrome. So the pirates all were like, this guy is such a fucking idiot. We've got to get out of here. And he's like, that's what I wanted, was to just be like, I'll help you. I'll do anything you want. And then just was maliciously compliant. It would be like, I'll open every door. And then would open like closets with nothing in it. And so then when he would get to the rooms where his people were, they would be like, it's just nothing. This guy's wasting our time.
Mm-hmm. Also, when the pirates boarded, all of them boarded. So they did not have a getaway driver still in mm-hmm. the skiff. So it's like, well, they clearly have no intention of getting back on that, so their plan is to take this ship mm-hmm. from me.
He's like, I looked out, and the skiff was upside down, and I was like, I don't think that the wind did that. And that means they're not leaving on their own.
They don't plan on getting back on there just after we give them some money.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
Phillips tried to keep them calm as he led the pirates through the mess deck into the passageways, hunting for his crew. At one point, he offered them fruit from the galley. Eating the offered treats, the pirates struggled with their huge rifles.
You need some help? Here, let me carry the gun,
Phillips said, a line that drew laughter from the pirates as they headed back to the bridge again.
He had kind of a rapport going with them at first of like, I'm just an idiot. I don't know. Of course, in the movie, they amp it up that it was always like, ah. But he said, for a while, I offered them shoes out of one of the rooms because he's like, I realize how desperate they must have been when they saw one of the crew's like Crocs and they were like leather sandals. It should have been Crocs. And they were like, those are, and he goes, it was so like endearingly sad that they're like, those are nice sandals. And he's like, do you want them? And they're like, yeah. He's like, they were had an AK-47 on me, but wouldn't steal the sandals.
Yeah. And half of them are barefoot, you know? Yeah, I mean, they're so they have nothing, literally. Mm-hmm. But that's a good tactic, like mm-hmm. befriend and, you know, also provide, and maybe they take some sympathy on you.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, 16 crew members had hidden deep in the ship's machinery spaces. The air conditioning was off, and temperatures climbed rapidly in the dark. The leader, Muse, went searching for the crew again, but this time on his own. On B deck, Chief Engineer Mike Perry confronted Muse. A brief struggle broke out in near total darkness. Perry slashed Muse's hand and held a knife to his throat, but chose not to kill him. Instead, he took him hostage in one of the ship's rooms below.
Chief Engineer Mike Perry was ex-Navy, not Navy SEAL, just ex-Navy. But he was a born-again Christian country music singer, budding country music, and was just in his room reading the Bible when he gets this, like, it's 7 a.m. and, like, pirates are coming. So I think being ex-Navy, you kind of think, okay, I'm going to get a tactical position. But Mike thought he had a gun. So when he and Muse come to, like, this, like, head-to-head, he hid. And so the pirate comes around, and that's when there's a struggle for the knife. But I think it says something about Mike Perry that he chose not to take a life in that moment.
I think it would be smarter not to take a hostage, and then you're trying to exchange.
To exchange. And the engine room was so hot. Phillips on deck was, or on the bridge, was like, at some point, my men are going to start passing out, throwing up, because it was getting to be like 130, and just
crazy.
Slowly climbing. So he's like, I got to not die, not kill my crew, and not like have the pirates take the ship. I was like, that's a lot to handle.
He had a lot on his plate. JFK, he had no idea what was to come, though.
I can handle it.
When the pirates realized their leader was missing, they grew frantic. They threatened Phillips, demanding his crew return Muse. Phillips offered the pirates a deal. Release him and leave the Alabama. In return, the pirates would receive a man overboard boat, or MOB, $30,000 cash, and their wounded leader.
In the safe in Phillips's room, he had $30,000 in cash, which was for, he's like, you know, you might need to buy something at port or whatever. And early on, one of the able-bodied seamen was out loud being like, Cap, you should just give the pirates all the money in the safe in your room. And he was like, shut up. He's like, we need like a bargaining chip. But $30,000 was low for these folks because when they took the whole crew hostage, they could get $2 million. But he decided to offer them this boat because they didn't really need it. And all the boats have them. And he's like, it'll just let them go.
They didn't have their skiff. Here, we'll give you your, which I thought was a good deal. But they just had 7 pirate attacks, and all their fellow pirates were like, we just saw these guys get like $1 million. Mm-hmm. We're not taking 30 grand. The pirates agreed. Phillips prepared the open top MOB. He loaded it with 5-gallon buckets of diesel fuel, which Phillips made sure included plenty of sludge from inside the buckets and hoses in an attempt to sabotage the getaway boat's engine. When the pirates loaded themselves and the money into the MOB with Phillips, it failed to start due to a dead battery.
Kill me. You're like, they're just this close. And it's like, and he's like, all righty then.
Yeah. He'd already set it up to where, providing the battery worked, they wouldn't get very far because of all the sludge in there, but they didn't even get that far.
He's like, y'all go that way, we'll go this way. And he's like, by the time the engine stops, you know, whoever, the Navy or whatever, is going to come get them.
Yeah.
Damn it. Check your battery, people.
Phillips then offered the Alabama's lifeboat, a covered orange vessel mounted high on the starboard side. It was about 25 feet long, enclosed, and powered by a single diesel engine. The pirates, along with Phillips, got into the enclosed lifeboat and loaded it with fuel.
It's so small.
It's so small. And are you playing the video now?
I can, yeah.
Okay, here's what happens when this thing gets launched off the ship if you need it.
I don't want to be inside of it. But I guess if the alternative is to sink with a ship, take me, Lord. Jesus, take the wheel.
Yeah. If it was a ride at Disney World, maybe it's fun. This looks like a Titan situation. I don't know if we're coming back up from that. I feel like it would just crack upon immediately hitting it.
We might come back from it, but there would be inside an unfortunate fecal incident. Sure. But yeah.
When the crew released the locking pin, the craft dropped 45 feet and slammed into the Indian Ocean below. With Phillips under the pirates' command, Chief Mate Shane Murphy became acting captain. Murphy maneuvered the Alabama close to the lifeboat for an exchange of fuel and food. Pretending to demonstrate how to use it, Phillips tried steering the lifeboat into the ship's hull to disable its propeller, but failed.
I'm like, dog, just let him fucking go, hero. And he was like, I probably should have just let him go later on. But at the time, if you're the crew, you're like, Captain,
get out of that lifeboat.
Damn it.
The crew helped Muse, the wounded pirate leader, aboard the lifeboat and prepared to receive their captain in exchange. Instead, the pirates refused to allow Phillips to return to his ship. Holding him at gunpoint, they roared away, keeping Phillips as their hostage. Well, that didn't turn out the way he'd hoped.
No, you hear that engine kick on, you're like, I knew that was going to happen. Son of a bitch.
He was too nice. He just needed to say, you get in, I'll stay out here and tell you how to turn it on from the safety of the open air.
I will say, as a person who's never captained a ship, I'm a bit of a Monday morning quarterback, but get the fuck out. Get out of the boat.
I feel like now you could, since you've seen the bowels of
it. That's true. Never mind. I'm an expert.
Idiot. No.
Inside, the leader sat at the helm with a pistol. Another pirate guarded the stern. A third watched from the front, and the fourth slept on the bow. They were all exhausted, dehydrated, and volatile. The lifeboat's air was stifling. Phillips recalled,
"The engine ran under the floor, heating it like lava."
And there's no air, and goddamn, can you imagine the smell inside there? Everybody's just going to the bathroom, sweating, mm-hmm. bleeding.
Not good.
Not having showered for God knows how long, and just this stifling. It's like just a pot with the heat being turned up, and you're all lobsters inside of it.
For real. And you're like, even the tiny windows, you can't super see. He just sat in this seat 15, whatever, and just stared at this safety thing and was just like, I guess this is where I'm going to be now. Because this was 2009. Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal journalist who was taken by terrorists in 2001 and killed, was very fresh on everyone's mind, because when Somali pirates would take you, they might just take you for ransom and take the money, but they also might take you back to the coast. And when you got back to the coast, there was some intermixing with Al-Qaeda, and you could be taken then to an Al-Qaeda stronghold, in which case it was very unlikely that you were going to be rescued. I mean, they might get your hostage money and then just... or use you or torture you or whatever. So he was very aware that this is, I'm probably going to die. Like,
this is probably it.
Yeah.
Soon, backup arrived as the USS Bainbridge appeared on the horizon. The Navy destroyer had been dispatched to monitor the drifting lifeboat in response to Phillips' distress calls. The ship's name was ironic. Commodore William Bainbridge had himself been a merchant mariner captured by pirates centuries earlier.
He was like, he didn't know that at the time, but I mean, that's probably a good feeling if you see a naval ship on the horizon and then it just sits there and you're like, so you're just going to watch me die? Or
what's the plan here, boys?
What are you guys doing?
The Navy made contact with the pirates by radio and confirmed Phillips was alive. Phillips later wrote that he had no idea what the Navy's plans were, so he decided to escape on his own. Despite the threat of sharks in the area, one night he jumped into the waters and began swimming like hell toward the Bainbridge. Realizing their hostage had escaped, the pirates sped toward him in the lifeboat. Phillips later wrote,
"They stopped the engine directly over my head. I swam under it, hiding beneath the edge of the lifeboat."
After a game of deadly hide-and-seek, the pirates hauled him back aboard and pistol-whipped him mercilessly. After that, they kept him tied up, with two armed pirates on him at all times.
And he was like, before that, we kind of talked, joked around. One of the pirates in the lifeboat started telling him, like, when I get off here, I'm going to take my girlfriend to the movies. Like, I want to go and take her. And Phillips was like, you should only do that and don't do this. You don't want to do this. And one of them, he was like, was a kid. He's like, I knew my kid was his kid was a sophomore or freshman in college. And he's like, he was definitely younger than Dan. So he felt almost like, buddy, don't do this. And then but one of them was very shitty to him, but wasn't physically harming him. But he was like, literally after I jumped off and I kind of get it, it was no holds barred. And he was just kept like arms like above the head the whole time.
At the same time,
dog.
Captain Phillips, dog. If you see that the Navy has arrived, like Tommy said, when we were, he was like, just fucking sit there and wait for them to do something. Just don't try and like fight them or escape. You're only going to make it worse. But he said he didn't know what their plan was. I would say, I'm going to assume they've got one if they showed up. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
They sent a big fucking ship. They're going to do something with it. But then to the Navy's credit, they were like, we didn't know what was going on. The pirates had been and letting him piss off the back of the boat. They have been pissing off the back of the boat. And they had also been jumping in and swimming around and getting back on because it was so hot. They didn't really let him jump off and swim, but they would let him like stick his head out every once in a while before that. And so he kind of took advantage of the freedom a little bit. But the Navy was like, when we saw somebody jump in, by the time we really like locked in and figured out it was you, the pirates were like, we would have had to kill you.
Yeah. So.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
The Navy sent boxes of water, radio batteries, and chocolate Pop-Tarts via a small boat. The heat and lack of ventilation left Phillips drenched and delirious. The pirates forced him to urinate on himself. As one pirate jeered,
"You can't die a clean death."
And none of them were after all these chocolate Pop-Tarts arrived.
The Navy was like, "Hey, fuck you guys." It's like, what? I have to eat these too.
There's no ventilation in this thing. We've been in here for days. Now you're just plying us all with chocolate Pop-Tarts.
Like, at some point, you're contributing to my torture by sending me only chocolate. They're like, "There's food." "It's only chocolate Pop-Tarts." And he was like, "I'm not that hungry."
The pirates quarreled often. The youngest, armed with an AK-47, repeatedly clicked the trigger against Phillips' face. Another snapped at his companions, shouting,
"You're lazy!"
Before an argument over sailing skills spiraled into screaming, arguing amongst themselves in Somali. Phillips tried to talk to them in an effort to keep them distracted.
Yeah, he said at first, and it's, you can imagine, they were willing to talk to him about sailing, about knots, and he was like, "I kind of had with Musée," he's like, "I had a little bit of like a captain's, like, we get it thing." And then eventually they, yeah, as you can imagine, everyone's emotions are running
tensions
high.
Tensions have escalated.
And he's like, so then I'm like, "Oh, cool, they're all going to fucking shoot each other with AK-47s in an enclosed boat that I'm also in." Like, he was like, "Everyone just be cool. Let's all fight. Let's all just be friends.
Here's a Pop-Tart."
"Just calm down with a Pop-Tart." I'm like,
yeah, they're like, "If you hand me one more Pop-Tart,
I'll fucking kill you."
Days dragged by. The Bainbridge stayed within sight, joined eventually by other U.S. vessels. With the heat and exhaustion taking their toll, the pirates agreed to be towed, hoping to reach shore. Phillips felt the tension rise as the tow line connecting the lifeboat to the huge naval ship strained and the heat intensified. At some point, Phillips and the pirates noticed
splashes and black shapes
in the water off the Bainbridge's bow and asked via radio what they were. The Navy assured them it was just dumping garbage overboard, but Phillips suspected otherwise.
Yeah, he's like, well, it turns out the U.S. Navy and maybe other militaries, but at least he was like, as merchant marines, we can't throw garbage overboard, but the Navy can throw anything it wants overboard. I was like, what?
Well, let's hope that's not the case.
Hang on
a
minute.
It probably is.
But he thought, oh, it's maybe sailors like jumping off doing recon, but what he didn't know was, the SEALs were coming. They, can you imagine parachuting SEALs? It would be so cute.
Or they have little AKs on their flippers.
But it's like, we've sent in the SEALs. You're like, oh, great. And they're like, they've brought their bounciest balls. And you're like, fuck, I'm going to die.
To pass time, the pirates made Phillips untie and retie knots under the threat of being shot if he failed. When he fainted from heat exhaustion, they accused him of pretending and kicked him awake. Sleep was tough, as Phillips recalled.
It was a sauna that smelled of sweat, diesel, and urine.
The Navy sent dry clothes for Phillips, including a bright yellow shirt. He thought it was strange since he was too dirty and sweaty for a shirt, but he put it on anyway. This would prove to be a pivotal decision.
He thought he was donezo. He was like, I literally shut my eyes and was like, Andrea, I love you. You've been the best thing that's ever happened to me. He's like, I just said in my head all the things I wish my family knew and just made peace that I was going to die. Because the pirates would say, we're going to kill you here so that way your soul gets stuck in the Gulf of Aden and you can never go back and be with your family. And he goes, if you kill me here, I'm going to become a ghost and I'm going to haunt you for the rest of your life. And I was like, fuck, I would say that too.
I mean, at that point, what do you have to lose? Talk all the shit you want. You're probably dying anyways.
But that's what the Navy saw was a drone's eye view. So it was kind of blurry.
What a stressful thing to have a gun to your head while you're having to tie and retie knots.
Mm-hmm. They're like, you're fucking up, you're fucking up. And they're like, don't let that one drop. And then they would hit him with the gun if it dropped. And I think it was just, you know, mind games.
Yeah, just torture.
Mm-hmm.
By April 12, 2009, the standoff had stretched to 5 days. Navy SEAL marksmen had positioned themselves aboard the Bainbridge. On the lifeboat, Phillips sat in the center, listening as the pirates continued to argue and insult one another. He couldn't tell what they were arguing about or even how many were still on board, but he heard them get increasingly upset.
Yeah, he said he was just like kind of laid to the side, like eyes shut because everyone was just screaming at each other. And he's like, I don't know what they're saying and I'm just going to get out of the way.
Moments later, Phillips heard
6 or 7 shots fired in a row.
He dropped to the floor, assuming the pirates were shooting each other. Silence followed. Then a voice outside shouted,
"Are you all right?"
Phillips looked up. Three pirates lay dead. Phillips suddenly realized why he'd been given the bright yellow shirt.
Yeah, at first he was like, I was so sweaty and gross. Why would I put this on? And I just did. And then I was like, oh, my God, they wanted to know who I was versus who their targets were. So the Navy SEALs put themselves, this is a digital reenactment, but they put themselves on the stern of the ship and waited until they had aim.
Aim. In a moving boat. To a moving lifeboat,
yeah,
having to get a shot through very small windows to and get a clean shot.
And the Navy said that we only fired three shots so that we could make sure that the hostage was secured. Phillips's book said, I heard six or seven shots. Later analysis seems to indicate there were maybe up to 19 shots, which, if we're call it what it is a war crime. You can't annihilate people if they were still living. And Phillips said that one of the pirates seemed to still be alive, and then the Navy came in and made sure that wasn't the case anymore. And the Navy's like, no, we only shot enough times to secure the package. But in reality, it's the U.S. Navy, and they were like, we'll just get them, fuck it, kill them all and get the guy, whatever. So there's a story, an official story, the movie story, and probably what really happened.
They kept telling him to sit in the same chair he was in the lifeboat, too, because I think they're planning to light it up, because a lot of the bullet holes were from the outside in, more than three.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So they get that yellow shirt on, stay in your seat, and cross your fingers that you don't get shot on accident. Muse, the leader, had been taken aboard the Bainbridge earlier looking for medical help. He also demanded safe passage for himself and the three other pirates in return for Phillips's release. Instead, while Muse was on the ship, SEAL sharpshooters killed his fellow pirates. With no other choice, Muse surrendered without resistance. The Navy then pulled Phillips from the lifeboat. On board the Bainbridge, medics cleaned his wounds and handed him clean clothes. He brushed his teeth, showered, and was offered a cooler full of beer. Before he could get too comfortable, a medic approached and said,
"The president wants to talk to you."
Dude, back when you would be like, fuck yeah, and not, what?
What? No, tell him I just was in a whole fucking hostage ordeal. He's the last person I want to deal with. Yeah.
No. Tell him the pirates killed me. I don't want to talk to him.
No, please.
Tell him I'm dead. Tell him I'm dead.
I'm not around anymore. Well, President Barack Obama, God, how we miss you so, spoke to the captain by phone, saying,
"I think you did a great job out there."
I gotta work on my Obama.
No, your Obama's just as good as your JFK. Don't think otherwise. Phillips thanked him, and they briefly discussed their favorite basketball teams, the Bulls and Celtics, and then Kevin Garnett's jump shot.
Which, like, what a fever dream that you're just like, first shower I've taken in 5 days that I haven't had just a gun pointed at my face. And he's like, "So, what do you think about the Celtics?" Hello? And then he called Andrea. Obama called the Captain Phillips' wife afterwards. And he's like, "Andrea, I just spoke to your husband. He's doing well." And Andrea, if you want to read Captain Phillips' book, read it only for all the stuff about Andrea we couldn't fit in. She's very funny. And she goes, "So I'm the second person you called?"
Honestly, though, did I call them the Celtics a minute ago?
You did. You did.
I'm sorry.
It's 8:57 a.m. And for us, it's 7:57 a.m. So that was
and,
aces.
And in our defense, normally we're talking about Celtic wishes and stuff like that. So, like, I know the Celtics, all right? But, yeah. They're the Celtics now, the Boston Celtics. And instead, every time they make a basket, they have to do a little river dance.
Exactly.
That's how we make basketball fun again. We, like the Harlem Globetrotters, the Celtic River Dancers.
That's who the Globetrotters will play them for sure.
Back in Vermont, Phillips' wife, Andrea, was preparing to take a nap, hard relate, around 11:30 that morning when she turned on the television. Still believing her beloved Rich was held hostage, she was shocked to see the breaking news banner on screen, claiming her husband had been rescued. She ran downstairs, screaming at the friends and family gathered to help her, to confirm whether it was true.
Yes, she said, well, at first she was just getting news from the news, and it was horrific. And it would just be like, he's dead. He's not dead. We're not sure. So eventually, Maersk sent a contact there, two people from Maersk who had direct lines to the Department of Defense, back when it was called that, and were able to give her legitimate breaking updates. And she had heard on Thursday, the Maersk guy goes, the Navy told me to tell you it's either going to be a very good Friday or a very happy Easter. And she's like, because this was on Thursday before he was rescued on Sunday. She's like, what? And he goes, all I can tell you is it's going to be a good Friday or a happy Easter. And she's like, my husband's being held. Could you fucking
he's
tell
like,
me?
Again, a good Friday or a happy Easter.
So it was. She said, my Easter basket runneth over because it was the happiest nice. Easter.
Yeah. Well, it was code for we're killing him either Friday or Sunday, but your husband's going to be back one way or the other.
Yeah.
Her phone rang and it was Rich. He asked the same question he always did when calling home while on assignment.
Is your husband home?
Andrea said, no. And he replied,
good, I'll be right over.
Thrilled he was alive and okay, Andrea still had to ask,
what were you thinking getting onto that lifeboat?
You have to.
Dude.
I would do this. I'm like,
babe,
I'm so glad you're alive. But what the fuck was that?
Babe!
What you just tell him how to run it from the deck. You don't get on it with him.
Goddamn. For whatever reason, I feel like both of our husbands would have ended up on that lifeboat. For separate reasons.
Phillips later described the rescue as a moment of whiplash, going from hell to a dream. He got a few beers and a much-needed shower and change of clothes. That night, aboard ship, Phillips woke from a dead sleep and
sobbed like a child.
The next morning, the SEAL commander advised him to see a psychologist once he returned home to process the trauma of being held hostage. Almost as if an ironic reminder from the universe, the Bainbridge made a detour on its way to take Phillips home as it chased off pirates threatening yet another American ship, the Liberty Sun.
Yeah, he said they were taking him to meet another ship that he would have gotten on a helicopter and then been taken to the airport. But as they were going to meet that ship, one of the sailors was like, hey, I'm sorry, we got to make a detour to, there's more pirates. And he's like, what was I going to say, no? He's like, yeah, go save them. He's like,
go
and take
it.
Me. I think he was definitely trying to enjoy the Navy part. Like, you get to be on a big Navy ship. For as a Marine nerd, you would love that. But look at his face. This is one of the first pictures of him taken after he was rescued. And, like, he's got a 1,000-yard stare, understandably. And he was, in his book even, which was written after the thing, he's like, well, I don't really see nut doctors. We're like, buddy, you've got to, let's destigmatize mental health. And I love that the baddest asses among us that are the ones that literally parachute in, the Navy SEALs, we're like, no, we all go and see a psychologist. Yeah. Like, you should absolutely see
We see the best SEAL psychologist.
The mega SEAL. It's a walrus.
It's the walrus. It's the walrus.
So you're having trouble.
That's Dr. Walrus.
Instead of a couch, it's just a little inner tube that the SEALs lay back on.
I'm about to be Dr. Walrus on Perfect Day at Coco K in a minute, for real.
Dr. Walrus is a kid's book that we got to write.
We do. But he explained, the Navy SEAL was like, when you've been held hostage, your body physically holds on to that trauma. And he's like, if you don't let it out by crying and by getting it out, you're going to lose it.
It's
so,
called PTSD,
yeah,
folks.
Dog.
You got, even if like, I mean, I guess this turned out the best way it could for him.
Yeah.
It is a hugely traumatic situation that you definitely need to seek help for.
100%.
After that, Phillips was flown to the USS Boxer to meet the SEAL team and command staff. He told the SEALs and sailors who rescued him that he wanted to meet and thank each one personally. One SEAL admitted to him,
our missions rarely turn out this way. And one of the SEALs did this, and then years later was the one that fired the shot that killed Osama bin Laden, Mark Bissonnette.
So he's had a hell of a career.
He has. He's written two books. No Easy Day is one of them. And then I have a second book, and I can't remember the name of it. I should read it. But I got to see him speak one time, and it was before his name was public. And so the only interviews he had done, he used a fake name, Mark Owen, and that was what his books were published under. And he would wear, like, a fake nose and fake prosthetics in interviews. So when we saw him, he didn't have any of that on, and he made everyone leave their cell phones out in a basket outside. It felt very, like, covert. But good public speaker. It was crazy to just stare a person down that lives that life.
Yeah, I just rewatched Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, dude.
So I saw his reaction mm-hmm. when he took out Bin Laden. Phillips arrived in Vermont the following Friday morning aboard the Maersk private jet, greeted at the airport by crowds of reporters and his relieved family. He still bore rope marks on his wrist and bruises across his face, but was alive.
His wife later said her and the kids were standing there, and the daughter just went, "I'm sorry, Mom, I've got to run to him."
Oh, gosh. Abdulwali Muzay was brought to the United States to face federal charges, including piracy. The case marked the first U.S. piracy prosecution in over a century.
Yeah, flown all the way back to New York.
An age dispute delayed proceedings. Musée claimed to be a minor. After medical and dental examinations and testimony, a federal judge ruled that he was at least 18 and would be tried as an adult in New York. In May of 2010, Musée pled guilty to three lesser charges. The defense argued he had been manipulated by older men and acted out of desperation. The piracy charge itself was dropped as part of a plea deal.
But he still had to plead to some charges.
On February 16th, 2011, Musée was sentenced to 33 years and 9 months in federal prison. He is serving that sentence at USP Terre Haute, Indiana, with a projected release date around 2038. Since being incarcerated, he has earned his GED.
Good for you, Musée.
Phillips' memoir, A Captain's Duty, Somali Pirates, Navy SEALs, and Dangerous Days at Sea, co-written with Stephen Talty, was published in 2010 and recounts the hijacking from Phillips' perspective. The same year of his memoir's release, 11 Maersk, Alabama crew members filed a federal lawsuit in Houston against Maersk and Waterman Steamship Corporation, seeking nearly $50 million in damages. The suit alleged willful, wanton, and conscious disregard for their safety, claiming company negligence and Captain Phillips' recklessness in steering the ship into known pirate waters.
Yeah, we all celebrated him as a hero, and all the people on the boat were like, "Woo!"
Yeah, they had a big issue with the movie when it came out because he was portrayed as such a hero, and they're like, he really wasn't. Even he himself in his book was like, "I never said I was going to like give my life up for the crew." He was kind of just like, "I had four problems. I needed to not let the ship get taken, try to not let my crew get killed, keep everything on the ship, and get taken as hostage." Well, he managed three out of the four, but once he got the other one situated, he was like, "Now I just got to worry about myself." So he kind of looked at it as like a checklist to check off.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
Extra value meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
The crew cited 7 warnings from a private maritime security agency, urging all vessels to stay at least 600 nautical miles off the Somali coast. According to the Alabama's own logs, the ship was roughly 300 miles offshore when attacked. Chief Engineer Mike Perry told CNN,
"All ships had been warned." So yeah, if that's like 300 miles where they were, I mean, double that. He should have been out there, and he was there, so they were pretty pissed.
And he later said, like, there's pirates at 300 miles, there's pirates at 600 miles, there's pirates at 900 miles, so no matter where we go, we're going to get attacked. And it's like, well, maybe.
However,
but let's make our chances a little less likely.
I think, too, you do have to remember Maersk is a corporation. They have contracts. They had to get places on time, and you get in trouble if you don't hit certain things at certain times. So there was probably also some efficiency interest.
For sure.
Maersk and Waterman denied wrongdoing, maintaining that routing decisions followed industry standards and that Phillips acted appropriately under his authority as master. The case was settled for an undisclosed amount around 2013. Phillips' memoir served as the basis for the 2013 film Captain Phillips, starring Tom Hanks. The film drew heavily from ship logs and Navy transcripts, with the climactic SEAL rescue portrayed accurately according to official accounts.
We got to shout out Barkhad Abdi, who played Muse. He was nominated for an Oscar, mm-hmm. and he fucking lost to Jared Leto.
Boo.
Yeah. Boo. The Oscars are illegitimate.
Yeah.
In the years since, Phillips has delivered corporate lectures and keynotes on leadership, crisis management, and decision-making under pressure, drawing lessons from his ordeal. Several crew members later told reporters they felt the Hollywood portrayal made Phillips a hero while minimizing the coordinated actions of the crew.
I would agree with that. And he, to be fair, even in his book, he really talks about how good the crew was, and the movie didn't really include it.
No, they were kind of just down hiding for the majority of the movie.
Piracy has never fully disappeared. According to the International Maritime Bureau's 2025 report, high seas pirate attacks are up 50% this year, with 116 total attacks. Even with that increase, that is the second lowest total in 30 years, and down nearly 80% from the peak in 2005, when 471 vessels were attacked. In the Somali Basin, hijackings have declined sharply since the 2009 Maersk, Alabama incident, though sporadic attacks still occur when naval patrols thin. The Gulf of Guinea off West Africa remains the most dangerous region for crew kidnappings and armed robberies. Emerging piracy hotspots now include the Red Sea and parts of Southeast Asia, where incidents usually involve theft rather than hostage taking. And we've all seen the TikToks of modern day pirates coming up. Normally now within their skiff is just a lot of fresh fruit and bread, and under those are AK-47s, and they the ruse is, we're just here to sell you some
fresh
some food, and now ships are on to them and take much more precautions. Barbed wire, huge hoses, axes, probably guns.
A lot
at
more
this point.
Piracy cages too, yes, which you said this the Alabama didn't really have. They had doors you could kind of lock, but much more robust features.
Yes, those locks got quickly shot off with the assault rifles. The risks to merchant mariners endure, though international coordination and onboard security measures make it less likely we'll see another large-scale hijacking like the one survived by Captain Phillips. So what do we think?
Man, like I said, we've been joking around and giving him a lot of shit as Monday morning quarterback. So the movie does portray him as a hero. In the book, he portrays his actions, some of which are captain heroic, right? You're not supposed to, like, just throw your whole ship, you know, be like, they're all down in the engine room if you want to kill them. You know, he took some heat up there, and so I'll give him credit for that. And the self-awareness of going, I should have gotten out of the bridge. He later said, I felt like a captain in my cockpit of an airplane. Like, I did not want to let go of that, and I now know that was my ego. Like, I should have absolutely just gone and hid with the crew. And then on the flip side, too, I think we've hopefully come a long way as a society in how we look at Abdulwali Muse and his fellow Somali sailors. I hate to call it, they hated to be called pirates, but other than what they did, I mean, that's pretty much what they were. But when you
they called themselves fishermen.
Fishermen to this day, like when I pulled that image of Galco or whatever, where he's from, the whole areas in that Somali is still receiving international humanitarian aid, so they're still struggling. So all we've done is decimated the piracy economy, and it is a huge effect on that local economy not to have piracy anymore. They said maids, servants, sex workers, people who relied on the piracy income now are suffering devastation. I'm not saying bring piracy back. I'm saying we have to be cognizant when we overfish an area and then go, you all turn into pirates when we stole all your food. And then go, you can't be pirates anymore. It's like, what do you think folks turn to really desperate measures whenever there is, we're all a society, a whole world society, right? We're from all over. So we got to take care of our brothers and sisters.
If there was an easier solution than riding those
Yes. Just like skiffs that are on the verge of breaking down in any second out there and putting themselves in danger, they wouldn't do it.
No.
But there's not opportunity. And yeah, I'm not a pirate apologist, but they didn't, like you said, they weren't born pirates.
Mm-mm.
They were kind of forced into that life by other countries overfishing their waters. But yeah, I think Captain Phillips now realizes he made some mistakes, because it wasn't just himself that he kept in at the helm of the ship. He had several other people in there with him. So he put those crew members in danger as well by refusing to go down below. But in the end, it worked out for him.
Yeah, I mean, you got a little bit tortured. They beat you. They force-fed you chocolate pop-tarts.
Probably had PTSD. Yeah, I hope
truly.
He got over his stigma of seeking mental health assistance and went and got some therapy.
For sure, yeah.
And his family. I mean, everybody there is affected by that.
Oh, 100%. So like I said, more details are in his book, which are fascinating on the familial side of it, how his wife was and wasn't getting information. She was also very funny. And someone at one point in their house had... So Rich, when Captain Phillips jumped off, his glasses flew off too. So he didn't have his glasses for a while.
It was like me on that blog.
100%. It was Christy on the blob situation. Their ophthalmologist saw that on the news that I guess they saw in some of the Are You Okay pictures his glasses were gone, and on his own made another pair of glasses. But then Captain Phillips' sister-in-law went to the bathroom at their house where everybody was gathered, and someone, not the ophthalmologist, had dropped their glasses in the toilet, and it kind of clogged, so they dug them out. And then she went downstairs and went, "Do you guys think these are Rich's?"
She was kidding.
Because they were like,
that's a good joke, though.
It was such a good joke that she's like, "Oh my God, his glasses flew into the Somali Sea. I found these in the toilet. Do you think they're his?"
It came up through the pipes. Could have been.
So as traumatized they all were, I think they probably dealt like we probably would, which is to fuck around about it.
You have to find moments of levity so you don't crash out completely. 100%. Sure.
Moments of humor. And I hope we did that today. I hope we did Captain Phillips and Abdulwali Muse and everybody involved in this Navy SEALs. Dr. Walrus, I'll be taking meetings at Coco K.
I hope Dr. Walrus is in network, because he's very expensive out of pocket.
Pay me with fishes.
Yeah, he definitely wants to get paid with sardines
or
whatever else they eat. Well, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
At this early morning hour, we are we're headed off to Coco K.
We have a pool party.
Everybody else gonna be at that pool party, I hope.
Thank you.
Well, before we leave, again, thank you so much to In Real Life for everything. Seriously, you guys have been so seamless. A pleasure to work with Brett, Ryan, other Ryan, Mitch, everybody. Thank you to Royal Caribbean. Thank you to our husbands, who not only are our husbands, but also work
the show.
They're part of the team, so they've
Brown
been
Town.
Working too. Paris and Tommy, thank you so much. But most of all, thank you to all of you for making this trip to come be with us and allow us to, such a big ask for fans to do this, and we couldn't be happier that
we appreciate it.
We get to be on vacation with all of you, and
Hell
now we get to go swim in the largest ocean water pool or some shit.
And let's go to this proprietary island and see what it's all about.
This is the only private island I'm going to go to.
Yeah.
So let's all go make the most of it enjoy your day.
Thank you
all so much.
Keep it creepy.
Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed, and Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
And we have great news right now through November 30th. We've got a deal for you. You can get 20% off of all new annual memberships with the code NOVEMBER. And if you want to stack your deals, you can do a 1 week free trial where you join for a week at any of the tiers, check out all the perks, and you can either cancel before the trial is over without getting charged, or use that code NOVEMBER for an annual membership and get 20% off. When you stick around all year, you get a lot of stuff like...
You also get a month for a free.
Yeah, already. Plus.
With an annual membership, plus the 20% off. And then if you stack it with the free trial, you could be doing all sorts of stuff. I like to game the system.
We're giving it away.
We're giving you a little hack on how to game this one. Yes, if you stick around, you will have access to ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, and quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner for all of your holiday shopping needs. You get merch there like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much to everyone who's left 5 stars and such kind reviews. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just enter your email. You get immediate access. Plus, you get a whole backlog of stuff that's just for free members.
We've had 33 Sunday Scaries now. I can't believe it. And that
33.
There's like 20 videos per Sunday Scary. So that's untold numbers of videos you can watch us react to, not to mention shit you can't unlearn, like how James Joyce has a fart fetish.
Also, take me back to the 90s, which was the 100%. Theme of this most recent Sunday Scaries, where we all just got to relive.
Yearned.
93, 95. Take me back.
I think we, through the videos, we determined when the best era was. So,
yeah.
Vote. You let us know in the comments.
You let us know. But I've decided if I could go back, I want to go back to 1980. What did I say? 87 through 1997.
So.
Yeah.
I think those
I'll
the
just
years.
Relive that decade. That's good for me.
Yeah, man. The aesthetics, the vibes. We can't wait. Well, head over to
the Hope.
So much hope.
The hope I had that no longer exists.
And it's just run through our fingers like the sands of time. Well, you can follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, it's coming up on the holiday season. And this is one of the best holiday gifts you can get because it's a total custom gift that you know they don't already have, or if you're stressed out from all your holiday planning, we would love to just make you laugh and smile. So head over to Cameo and you can book a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift and you don't actually have to go to the store to shop for it. So go to cameo.com/sinisterhood and get yours now. Where can people find you on the internet?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm pretty much everywhere at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts. Christine Howell.
Kim Adams.
Belinda Baroub.
Haley.
Chelsea Sizemore.
Kay Taylor.
Laura.
Haley Baker.
Pfeiffer Miller.
Debbie Turner.
Catherine Kay.
Kelsey Bradley.
Emily Nord.
D.
Chrissy.
Deborah Dillard.
Marin McCall.
Sassy Grace number 2817.
Kelsey.
Erica Jade.
Nakiri.
Clever.
And July Obolensky.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope you pronounce your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.